Hey guys, if you're enjoying our conversation with Marie Palladini, you can see photos of Marie on the job, or you can look at documents related to the case we're going to discuss today at naturessecretservice.com. Thanks for listening. Okay, everybody, listen up. Here we go. I'm Ed Newcomer. I'm the host of Nature's Secret Service, the podcast that puts you in the room with the men and women of wildlife law enforcement. Last week, we had a great episode with Marie Palladini. It was so good, we have to split it into two. So we're back with Marie today to finish hearing her story about how she almost single-handedly saved the American alligator. Last week, when we wrapped up, you were telling us how you were a brand new agent straight out of the academy and dropped right into the Special Operations Unit to work on an alligator trafficking case. So you're in SOU, and then so what happens? They ship you to Louisiana?
So I go to Louisiana to meet AJ.
And what's AJ like? Describe AJ.
AJ is...
I assume he's a typical informant.
Well, I don't know. You know, personality-wise, yes. But AJ, well, yeah, he's a typical informant. But, you know, when I think about him, I spent, you know, a couple weeks with him. He's the kind of guy that if you're not talking to him about the actual crime we're committing or he's committing, he's kind of okay. You know, you could have a beer with him, I guess. Uh-huh. Kind of a handsome man, actually, okay. In a rugged way. Very obviously... outdoorsy. He lived in the marsh. He was kind of crude, you know. Uh-huh. I don't know if he ever showered. Uh-huh. You know, that kind of guy. Had an accent, very much a Cajun or Creole type accent. Okay. From living in the marsh in Louisiana. But he was very, very savvy. He was the kind of guy that if you had to have an informant and work with him, you knew he was going to do what you needed to do to get the job done.
That's interesting.
He wasn't going to flake out on you, right?
Which is a problem with informants, as you and I both know well. I resisted. I could never. I watched you work with informants during the time we worked together and I worked for you. I couldn't understand how you had the patience to do it. I couldn't stand working with informants. They drove me crazy.
It's hard.
Yeah.
I mean, why are they informants?
Yeah.
They're dirtballs.
They're
bags. People that, you know.
Most of them.
Most of
Not
them.
All of them. But
so,
most
but,
of them.
You know, yeah, I don't want to generalize too much.
But they generally don't follow your directions.
No.
It's like herding cats.
No.
Yeah.
And you got to kind of, it does take patience, but it also takes to me, I had to tell myself, well, he knows this way better than I do. This is his life. He has lived his life committing this type of crime. I have not. I'm learning it, but is it ever going to be natural for me like it is for him? No. So I'm going to rely on this informant. So AJ physically, looked like somebody that lived in the marsh. He had coal black hair. He always wore a black t-shirt, you know, just kind of that stereotypical guy that I hate to say, use that word, but he is that, you know, if he walks in my office as a fish and wildlife agent, I'm thinking, okay, he wants to turn somebody in, you know.
Probably drove a pickup truck,
right,
no doubt.
Probably.
Right?
So I think he did.
Okay.
But they wanted me to meet AJ to see, well, can you do this? Because we don't know how long this is going to take.
You
know, basically, the outline of the operation was you and AJ are going to get the alligator skins, couple hundred of them. You're going to transport them in a van that the government's going to provide you with.
Okay.
You're going to drive it up to New York from New Orleans, and you're going to deliver them to Kelly whenever he tells you where and when.
Holy smokes.
And then once you deliver them, you don't know how long you're going to be there till you get paid, because the deal has to go through before AJ gets paid. And all the evidence is gathered to prove that this is a conspiracy. They know what they're doing, and they're sending everything overseas.
That's why you need to be there.
And that's why I had to be there.
Got it.
So they sent me to New Orleans. This happened very quickly.
Yeah,
I mean, I got out of the academy, I think, in, I don't know, August, and this was in October.
Yeah, your head must have been spinning.
It was. But I think, in a way, it was spinning because I really didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I knew enough from the academy. But I didn't realize how dangerous it was, I think. you know, when I think about hindsight.
I'll bet you did. Yeah. But you were young.
Yeah.
And you were confident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to catch them. I mean, that's kind of what it was.
I get it.
So the focus was there. But so I go to New Orleans, I meet AJ, and we come up with this plan. Dave Hall helped. But the plan had to be pretty simple as a cover.
Okay.
But first of all, they wanted me to meet him, make sure I could tolerate him, which was fine. It was okay.
Yeah. Because there has to be some camaraderie there. Nobody's going to believe you're his girlfriend, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
You're going to have to fake it to make
actually, it. Actually, that's true. So that was the beauty of youth at the time, too, right?
You know,
it was kind of like, oh, this is fine. So I met him. We had coffee or whatever we did, had a beer, and I told Dave Hall, this is going to be fine. So then we put together our story, which had to be very, very tight.
Yeah.
Because we were dealing with basic people that had committed a lot of crimes, and they were very savvy and on to what we might be doing.
Uh-huh.
So we drove up. So I met him. It was fine. We made our plan. We put skins in the van, and we drove up from Louisiana, and we went to New York. We had to stop in the way halfway, and we made calls.
Okay.
So basically.
So you stayed overnight?
Yes.
How does that work?
A couple times.
How does that work?
Actually, more than a couple times.
Okay, so I'm sure everybody listening is going to want to know.
Well, the first
How does
night,
this work when a female undercover agent is with a dirtbag informant?
Yeah.
And gets, you got to stay overnight.
And you get no training in this.
And why are you doing it that way, right? Like, why not get separate rooms? And the answer is,
well, because
somebody might be surveilling you,
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we drove up from New Orleans and had to stop in New Jersey, kind of a half, I'm sorry where it was, somewhere halfway. Anyway, we stopped there, and there was a surveillance team with us.
Okay.
So they were in the hotel as well. And then we did stay in the same room. The first night was very, very awful, horrible, strange. But it was a hotel room, and there were two of those beds, you know, like two double beds. So that night wasn't too bad. But the thing of it is, and this goes with youth, I was pretty tolerant of, you know, where I slept. It wasn't like I just got out of college where, you know, I didn't live in a nice house. I never had all the luxuries we have today. So this was a little easier for me to be with him overnight. And I knew the other agents were next door. So that was kind of okay.
Interesting.
And the first night was fine. I mean, I didn't sleep much, but I knew that the next day we were going to be meeting the bad guys.
I see.
So we stayed in the hotel. It was not a big problem. We called the bad guys and met them the next day in New Jersey. They gave us a meeting point. And the guy, Kelly's partner, was a guy named Greenblatt.
Uh-huh.
And he gave us instructions. Along the way, we had to make sure we had enough skins. We did all that. We stopped to maybe replenish them. I think we did that.
You needed more to make the deal.
To make the deal.
Work the way it was supposed to work.
We needed more skins to make it as he'd done in the past, and we didn't have enough, so we had to stop. And the Fish and Wildlife gave us more that had been confiscated and been, you know, they were done. They were property now.
Yeah.
So we had a realistic looking load.
Okay.
I think there were maybe a couple hundred.
Nice.
Yeah. So we delivered them. We got to New Jersey, and the instructions were to meet us at such and such a point, which we did. So we met this colleague, lack of a better word, co-conspirator of Kelly named Greenblatt. So Greenblatt, Billy was his name, Billy Greenblatt met us and told us where to drive to. He followed us in the van.
Okay.
And we went to Kelly's store. Kelly owned a discount clothing store. Because Kelly, besides dealing in alligator skins, dealt in hijacked truck goods. You know, he was part of a whole group of guys that would hijack trucks, take the clothes, and then sell them in his shop.
Interesting.
Yeah, he was kind of a small mobster.
And not uncommon, right? You know, if you're involved in one crime, you're likely going to be involved in others. Because in the end, it is about money.
Yes.
And this is why I think, you know, even sometimes agents underestimate the danger.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they lull themselves into this idea that, well, this guy's just involved in wildlife crime. He's not going to hurt me. But this guy's a hardcore criminal.
Yes.
Yeah.
And important point, before we went in, AJ said, you can't have your gun and badge with you.
Oh, wow. Yeah, normally, explain that too, because
I
did undercover work in my career too.
Yes.
Sometimes I carried a weapon when I was undercover, and sometimes I didn't. I assume you were the same, yeah?
Exactly. Depending on the situation. Yeah. The badge is one thing that probably I in most times when I was working undercover, I did not.
Yeah,
have.
I never carried my badge when I was undercover.
No. But the gun thing kind of concerned me because I knew that the profile of these people was that they were pretty dangerous, and I knew that they were probably carrying a firearm.
Right.
But he said AJ told me, Kelly will go through your purse. He will look at things. He will go through your bag. We're going to be staying near him or with him. It's not going to be a situation where he would take it lightly. If he found something like that, he would know you were an agent. So that's kind of was a decision I had to make where I had to not take it in with me. And Dave Hall and the other agents, you know, left it up to me pretty much. Not really. But I pretty much said, okay, I won't take it.
And it's funny because later in your career, you probably, you know, that's one of those examples where if an informant can kind of sneak the power dynamic change on you. Yeah. And that's one of the things you always got to be on guard on with an informant. They're not in charge.
No.
Right? Ever. But they'll try to take charge and they'll try to like influence you and convince you that they know best. And I guarantee you later in your career, you probably would have been like, oh, screw you. I'm going to take my gun.
No, because I had a recorder in my bag.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the same idea. I don't think AJ knew about that.
Yeah.
So, you know, but yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. And that's a learning process, mm-hmm. which is kind of interesting to me that the higher ups mm-hmm. went with it,
mm-hmm.
you know, because mm-hmm. I was depending on them to guide me and give me advice. Mm-hmm. So that happened. Man. No gun, no bad. But there was a very, very heavy, surveillance.
Yeah.
On us. I felt pretty comfortable.
How many agents did they have on you?
They had probably 8 or 10.
Wow. That's
from
good
New
cover
York.
Team.
Yeah. From customs. And because it was a joint case because of the import export issues. So we did work with the United States Customs at the time.
And this is interesting because this is not the days of cell phones and micro recorders. When you say you had a recorder in your bag, tell the listeners what kind of recorders we were using in the 70s.
Well, in the 70s, we were using pretty big cassette recorders that didn't have great audio aid, and they were heavy, and they were reel-to-reel tapes.
Yeah.
You know?
What were they
Dave
called?
Hall,
Nagras?
Yeah, Dave like Hall actually had some funding where he did buy a Nagra recorder, which they were very expensive. They were $4,000 or $5,000 each because the technology was so good. And they were probably about the size of a big cell phone today, you know.
So still pretty small.
Yeah. And I could put it in my purse but it was reel to reel. And I'll never forget Dave Hall saying to me after we came out of this, did you remember to turn it on? I'm like, yes. So not all the time though.
Right.
Because all the time it wasn't gonna be convenient to have it. So
sometimes tape runs out.
That's right.
And more importantly, as you and I know, sometimes you forget to turn it off.
Correct. And then you say things you don't want on there.
You say things that, you know, you make jokes about supervisors or whatever.
So not gonna happen.
Or you go
often.
To the bathroom and your recorder's still on. Yeah.
So it happens though, right? But yeah, so I mean, I'm not sure how much more you want me to go into, but we actually did, once we got to New York, there was a delay
in the
transaction taking place.
And that was because of a big storm, right?
Yes. Supposedly there was some big nor'easter, and then part of the deal fell through. So, but we, AJ and I, stayed in Kelly's cottage was somewhere in off of Long Island. He lived in an area called Breezy Point. He lived in a pretty nice area in Long Island, which we had gone to his house.
Kelly did. That's okay.
And Kelly then put us up in his summer cottage, which was kind of a dump.
So you had to do another overnight with AJ.
Oh, I had to do over almost a week.
Oh my gosh.
While we were waiting for the transaction to close.
Oh, a nightmare.
So it was a nightmare.
So what happened?
Well,
we know what happened.
Well, remember, he's AJ.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not, you know, one of my colleagues professionally.
Yep.
So we get in the cottage and remember, we don't have cell phones.
Yeah.
And pretty much Kelly dropped us off and said, okay, we didn't have the van either. The van was left in front of his business.
With the skins still in it?
With the skins in it.
So like his storage, mobile storage?
Yes,
for his skins?
For a couple of days, and then it moved.
Okay.
But he took us, we went to dinner or something, and then he dropped us off and said, I'll pick you up in the morning. So we were in this cottage, AJ and I, and, you know, it was time to go to bed for the night, basically. There's one bed. Mm. And I looked at AJ and I said, okay, you know, this is the deal. Meanwhile, in my mind, I'm thinking, he knows I don't have a gun.
Right.
But anyway, we get in bed, and this is a little uncomfortable for me, but yeah, we get in bed, and next thing I know, AJ's arm is near me. He's trying to touch me, and I'm cringing. So I basically put an end to it as best I could, and I said, this is not going to happen. Right. We're going to blow the whole case. We just cannot do this.
Okay.
And, you know, believe it or not, I don't know. I don't think I scared him, because I don't think I did. I think maybe he, because I say he kind of had a kind of a little different personality in some ways. I'm thinking maybe he thought about what was going to happen in the long run, yeah, and he backed off.
Yeah.
At that time, we didn't know we were going to be there as long as we were. So maybe he just thought, oh, well, one night, big deal. But he did back off. I didn't sleep. Yep. He went outside. I remember this is so weird. He wore these black T-shirts.
Yeah.
He went outside. There was some kind of spigot or outside thing. He washed his T-shirt.
What?
Yes, I'm serious. Came back in the room and put the T-shirt over the lampshade in the corner to dry. I'm like, is this what he does in the marsh?
Probably.
I
mean,
I don't know. But I remember that. It's funny how certain things visually had nothing to do with the case. Didn't matter. Yeah. But that was a personality thing. He did that. Interesting.
And he never hit on you again.
No.
That's good.
No, that is good.
And I think you might be underestimating your ability to intimidate. I've seen you intimidate very, very big, big people. Big guys, right? I've seen it with my own eyes. Yeah. So you do have the ability to turn on that law enforcement voice, that law enforcement stare. And even with your small frame, I've seen you back people down pretty effectively.
Well, thank you, Ed. Thank you for reminding me. That's true.
I'd be your partner any day.
Yeah. But the other thing is, and this is what's interesting about being a special agent and being dedicated to the mission, I really wanted this case to be successful.
Right.
I had something to prove as a new agent. I also had something to prove for them hiring women. I mean, I wasn't really waving that flag right then. I don't think I was that forward of a thinker. But I knew that this was an opportunity to really, really catch people doing something very wrong to natural resources and actually stop this enterprise. But we couldn't mess it up with something stupid like an informant putting the move on me.
Exactly.
And blowing the whole thing. So I really wanted him to not think he could do this again so that we could move forward with the case.
Right.
And we probably had a discussion about that. I don't really remember that part. I do remember, you know, having to stop him from, you know, being a guy, basically.
Right.
So, we moved on. And the next few days, I hung around the discount clothing shop with Kelly's wife.
Yeah.
This is a family operation. Kelly's wife was named Barbara. She was there. She would ask me questions all the time about how I knew AJ. Mm. And, you know, we had a good cover. It was short and sweet. I worked as a server back then. They were called a waitress. I got a job in the bayou, in the French Quarter. And AJ had been a bouncer, which fit. And he had been, actually. He had done stuff like that. So that worked. And I had actually been a waitress, you know, through my years in college.
Yeah.
So that kind of worked out. And we had a name of a place where we met and kind of left it at that.
The best cover stories are always the ones that are closest to the truth.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it sounds like she was testing you a little bit.
She was.
Definitely, right?
She was.
It wasn't just curiosity. She was probing your cover.
Yeah. And you know what else? Interestingly, I was thinking about, she asked me about the van.
Really?
Yes, because the van was mine.
Ah.
That was part of the cover, too. So, how much did I pay for the van?
Wow. Stupid question.
Uh-huh.
The only reason you'd ask that is to, you know, test you.
Uh-huh. And, you know, it's funny because that's something we actually talked about beforehand as part of our cover.
Good.
Because the Fish and Wildlife had it registered in Cold Plates. It was under my name in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, I think. So, basically, I told her a number, I don't remember, like $900 or something that we had agreed upon. And later on, I found out, not during the week that we were there, that Kelly asked AJ the same thing about the van.
No kidding.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Whoa. So they were testing us.
Totally.
Yeah, testing our cover. And he remembered, you know, and that was fine. It's hers, and yeah, she let me use it. Speaking of the van, they did move it after the second day, and this is really sleazy.
Mm.
Greenblatt, who remember I said was Jack Kelly's partner.
Right.
Greenblatt took the van to, are you ready?
Yeah.
Kelly's mother's house in Brooklyn.
Whoa.
Drove it there, and the surveillance team saw him do all this. Unloaded the skins, or they had repackaged them in boxes.
Okay.
Or containers, that wooden boxes that were labeled machine parts. because they were getting ready to put them on a ship to go somewhere. To
smuggle them out.
Yes. So he unloaded them. I think there were four or five of these wooden containers, and put them in the backyard of his mother's house.
Nice.
Nice guy, right?
Yeah, right.
So that's where they were stored.
Let mom go down for it.
That's where they were stored until they actually moved them to the docks later on.
There's no honor among thieves.
Right.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
So that's incredible. You know, thinking about Kelly's wife and Kelly testing your cover, you know, a lot, I don't know how it was with you, but every undercover case I ever did, everybody always questioned me, right? They always, at some point, they asked me if I was a cop or a game warden or something, or they did similar tactics like what you're describing. And it's not necessarily because they think, I don't think anyway, I'd be interested to see what you think about this. I don't think it's because they think you're a cop. They just think everybody's a cop because they're bad guys, right? So they're always, and if you give them just something to reassure them, they'll be fine.
Now, I agree with you. I think in all the years I did undercover cases, there was always a question or a test.
They always ask.
And I think as a new agent,
it doesn't mean you're burned.
No. Uh-uh. I think you tend to might think you are as a new agent. But then you learn, oh, no, this is just part of the whole
deal.
It happens
deal.
All the time. And you learn what works for you to kind of repel that. I never thought that her asking me how much the van was any sort of collaboration between her and Kelly to kind of check out who we were.
But it was.
But it was. Yeah, I found that. I thought of that later. There were probably other things that we didn't think about.
Yeah, for sure. There's other. For sure, there's other stuff that happened that didn't dawn on you that they were.
So the thing that was great about the case was after the deal finally closed, where Kelly made the actual transfer and they actually were able to sell the alligators to the Clappish company, which was Meg Imports. A whole lot of people involved here, but they were the next level. So you have AJ, and then you have Kelly and Greenblatt, and then you have Jack Clappish and his company Meg Import, which were shipping the skins overseas. So when that finally came to fruition, it was over a week. I left before they actually transferred the skins.
Okay.
There was some communication. I'd go to a payphone and call the SAC office because there was no phones.
Yeah. Well, I was going to get to that too because, with no cell phone.
No.
When you're updating your cover team, you can't walk up to them on the street. You're like running to the closest payphone, right?
Yeah. There was a little pizza place around the corner from the discount clothing shop. And, you know, if I was hanging around in the discount clothing shop where it went while AJ was out doing something with Kelly, I would go around the corner and say, oh, I'm going to go get a slice of pizza or a Coke or whatever.
And then you make your quick call.
And I'd make a call to the SAC office there in New York. And I'd tell them what was going on. And, you know, generally speaking, they'd say, oh, yeah, we got you. We got the surveillance team, you know. We're there, and this is what's happening. So one time, though, I called, and I said, hi, Jack. It was Jack Downs. He was the agent in charge. I said, well, it looks like the skins are going to be moved or whatever was coming
you
up
gave
that
your update,
day.
Yeah.
I tried to give him as much as I could because I couldn't really record everything.
Yeah, you're not
everything.
Recording everything.
Yeah. So. And one day when I called, I almost lost my breath because he basically said, Marie, where are you? I'm like, the same place I always am.
The cover team lost you.
Yeah, because they had switched, you know, the team, and they lost me, and they weren't sure, but they kind of got back in gear. But that was kind of scary, thinking that the surveillance team was not around.
Yep. I've been in those situations, too, where they either lose you or they're close, but they're not that close to you, right? Oh. And if something happened, you're on your own for a few probably minutes before they get to you.
Which could mean a lot.
A lot.
That could be, could be very deadly. It could be serious.
Absolutely.
So this was, you know, a bustling city, but still, it was a little discomforting. So, but I did that. And then one day when I called, they told me to make up a story because it looked like the skins were going to be moving. And now how they knew that or that, I don't know.
Something else going on.
Yes. Yeah. So I did.
Okay.
You know, I basically said, I got to go back to Pittsburgh, family issue or whatever. And AJ's going to stick around here and fly back after the deal's done. And then I said, wink, wink, I'll see you in New Orleans, AJ.
Right. Kiss, kiss, bye-bye.
Goodbye, I'm out of here. So I left, and then I met with the agents and the prosecutor. But up until that time, I had gotten enough information to prove the case as far as what Kelly was doing.
Nice.
And the information about Klapisch.
Nice.
The Klapisch case came to a close more so from the surveillance once they saw the actual containers moved to the docks.
Right.
And that's when they moved in and arrested everybody.
So what happened to these guys?
Well, I have to look at my notes.
Yeah, you know.
So this case, and the reason I think this is kind of a fun thing to talk about is up until this time, you know, most of the cases Fish and Wildlife investigated and enforced were pretty much misdemeanors. They weren't doing a lot of the international smuggling type cases. And this was almost a case of first impression. And basically what happened was, like I said before, there were more than 2,500 hides over the couple years of the investigation. I was in on the last part of it, right, which basically clinched it.
Yeah, you're cleaning up the whole chain.
Correct. Yeah. There was a two-year period where there was intelligence investigations, but this sewed it all up, so to speak.
Right.
So basically what happened was, and the value of these skins back then was over $1 million street value.
Wow.
Which I did a little math with you know, inflation.
Yeah, what's that worth
today
now?
Today it'd be like five.
Whoa,
like $5 million.
$5 million.
Worth of alligator hides. So the men were basically, they were pretty much, Kelly, the person that I investigated with, A.J. Kelly, was actually pled guilty to conspiracy to violate the Endangered Species Act.
Okay. Felony.
Yes.
The felony. Endangered Species Act is not, but the conspiracy is.
Conspiracy is, right. And he got, I can't remember exactly what he received. I don't know if I gave you
he
that.
He go to jail?
I'm sorry?
Did he go to jail?
Yeah, he did go to jail.
That's
and he
cool.
was fined.
Yeah.
As was Greenblatt. Greenblatt did not go to jail. Hmm. He was on probation and was fined a lot.
Okay.
And the exporter, Meg Imports and Klapisch, they basically were pled guilty to conspiracy to violate the Lacey Act.
Which is another a felony.
Law,
another felony.
That the Fish and Wildlife enforced, and they went to jail as well.
Yeah.
And the company was fined, I think, like $90,000, the company.
Wow, okay.
So, yeah, so I think it brought down their operation finally, and...
Do you ever have any evidence they started up again?
No.
You killed it?
No, it killed it.
Yeah.
Good. And I think not too long after that, I don't know this, I'd have to check with the biologist, the species started to come back.
Yeah, for sure.
Because now if anybody's in Florida on a golf course, they're going to see an alligator. Right?
All those people that lose their little dogs to alligators
right.
can curse
they're
you for that
They're not happy about that. So, and the law has made provisions for people to raise them in captivity. And, you know, so the skins are still available. It's just now they're legal.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it gave the... You know, gave the species a chance to recover, and then they can be used sustainably, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's an interesting footnote to this about AJ and this pass that he made at you. You told me this story when we were talking about, you know, prepping for this episode. What happened to AJ a few years later?
Mm.
Yeah.
So AJ was one of those informants that the service wanted to use on other operations because he proved himself to be pretty valid. Now,
we, a
good informant. We know that he wouldn't be great testifying in court, of course, which is why you have an agent with him.
Exactly.
Which maybe I should have said earlier.
Yeah.
The fact that I was there, he might have been on the ground a lot, but the credibility of what happened and the evidence and what I saw and what I could testify to were really kind of the clinchpin to basically prosecute
100%.
And get a successful prosecution.
You're the professional.
Correct.
Yeah.
He's the kind of the tool to use
exactly.
to get there. So because he ended up doing a good job on this particular case, he was sought out several years later. There was an investigation going on in Region 1 where I eventually was assigned to in California, and it involved Northern California and the Klamath River and the salmon that were being poached by not necessarily Native Americans, but actually people posing as Native American,
right.
white man trying to take advantage of the opportunity to salmon fish.
Okay.
Because indigenous people do have rights and white man does not. So there was an investigation going on, and basically the salmon were showing up in stores in,
commercialization.
Exactly. Yeah. In San Francisco, all over the nation. And there were sometimes marks on them that showed they were caught in nets.
Uh-huh.
So there was a kind of a suspicion that, you know, we need to get more involved, not in just what's being happened on the river, but in the actual commercialization of the salmon once they're taken from the river. So, gee, the Sacksworth, they're meeting again, and they decided, oh, we've got this guy, AJ. You know, he's a chameleon. He can be anywhere. He can fit in. So they hired him to work the salmon fisheries case. And he did. He was out on the river. He was working. And he actually did a pretty good job. And then, lo and behold, I hear that he was arrested for rape.
Oof.
While he was working for the Fish and Wildlife
That must have sent a shiver down your spine, huh?
Well, yes. And it was very... Well, besides, it did send a shiver down my spine, like, whoa. But also, it was kind of like, why do you have to do this? I mean, you know, he was kind of, you know, he's not a good guy by a long shot, but he was somebody that knew how to toe the line and work with Fish and Wildlife.
Right.
And then he kind of went off. And I don't know if he was ever convicted or if there was some sort of plea agreement, whatever happened. But I know that the Fish and Wildlife never used him again after that.
Well, I didn't mind working with informants who were, you know, law-abiding people who had information. I hated working with informants who were dirtbags.
Yeah,
because of stuff like this, they're not thinking the way you and I think, or the way law-abiding citizens think. And
No. And that's the trade-off.
It is
with informant type A or informant type B, right?
Yeah.
And usually, informant type A, the AJ type, are going to get into the nitty gritty of the dirty part, but you have to be able to tolerate them.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's hard. I mean, that's pretty much what agents with DEA have to do all the time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and different
local police, depending LAPD.
On your focus. But, you know, sometimes with Fish and Wildlife, we get somebody that's an informant and he's just mad because of a competitor.
Yeah.
You know, he may not really be somebody that's a career criminal in the sense of being a nasty, dirty person, kind of.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I had some good ones over the years.
Yeah.
They were really good.
Yeah.
In fact, you connected me with two of the best I ever had for caviar.
Yeah.
But I had some that I couldn't stand. And I very quickly stopped working with them. You know what I mean?
No, I know.
Very quickly transitioned into an undercover.
It's hard.
So, Marie,
yes.
On behalf of the alligators, thank you. For the
you're
work
welcome.
That you did. It's fascinating. There's so much more to talk about. I want to have you back for sure to tell other stories and talk about other things. One thing that's funny, when you first talked about when I came to the office, and this is, again, another compliment to you, you said that I had come and I was eager to do undercover work. Your memory of that is not correct. When I came out of the academy, I had decided I don't want to do undercover work. I wanted to just do overt cases. I wanted to flip the creds, go out, do the interviews, do the investigations, do the subpoenas, and make the cases. Screw this undercover work. Oh. Because when I was in the academy, I learned it's a lot of work. I mean, it's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. You're working weird hours, and then afterwards you have to write all these extra reports, summarize audio. If you're running an undercover business, you have to take care of books. I didn't want to do it. But when I started to work with you and you were talking about it and you were encouraging me to do it and you were showing me how to do it, I realized it's an incredibly valuable tool and I had to do it. And then I ended up loving it.
Yeah.
So it's funny.
Yeah.
I did end up liking it, but that was only because I think I learned how to do it correctly, which thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome.
Yeah.
It's kind of a, I don't know, it's a nice combination. I think that was one of the nice things about working for Fish and Wildlife as well. Once I was no longer in SOU when I moved to California, is you still have the luxury of working your own undercover cases if you want.
Yeah, if you want
field.
To.
You don't always have to be the, you know, coat and tie person, you know, going to do interviews. And it's a nice mix. For me, like I said, I enjoyed the undercover work, but you're right. I didn't really get into the part of when you do set up a business and
you
have to have a cover and you have to have, all your ducks in a row, so to speak, especially today because technology, it's so easy for you to get caught, get burnt, for your cover to get burnt as well. So,
and you know, like we're saying, if you spend a day with the bad guys, the first 4 hours after you get home, you're writing a summary of that contact because you got to do it while your memory's fresh. And then you got to transcribe your audio tapes and it's just a nightmare.
Yes. And you have to kind of like cleanse yourself after being with them all day.
Exactly.
So it's a whole different type of work.
Oh my gosh. We could do a whole episode on that of how do you decompress after spending all day with people that are not your people.
Right.
Right. Cause you go back home and your spouse, your siblings, your brother, sister, your neighbor, they expect you to go back to being Marie Palladini, mm-hmm. but you just spent all day being a dirtbag.
Yeah.
Right. That's true. Or hanging out with them. Yeah. So you kind of need that time to decompress. But yeah. we'll do a whole episode on that.
That will be a good one. Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. Look forward to seeing you guys next week. Thanks. Nature's Secret Service is written and produced by me, Ed Newcomer, and is co-produced by the DHTV team here at California State University, Dominguez Hills. Follow us on social media and connect with us online at naturessecretservice.com.